The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Welcome to the podcast. We're really excited. Tonight we're going to be in Richmond, Virginia. If you happen to be anywhere in the area, you know, stop the podcast now, grab your tickets, glenbeck.com/tour, and then come see us and listen to the podcast on the way. Tomorrow we're going to be on Friday. We will be in Hershey, Pennsylvania, then Pittsburgh on Saturday, and Sunday in Cleveland, Ohio. All the tickets, all the information at glenbeck.com, and we're coming to Florida really soon as well. So
tickets are glenbeck.com/tour, by the way.
Today's podcast.
Yes.
We start with two Saudi students that have been, they've gone missing.
Very strange story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Saudis are very curious. They're on it. They want America to know. These two Saudi students from Virginia, they go in, they ask the United States for asylum. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden they just disappear. And
it happens.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. They disappear sometimes in Virginia, and somehow or another they end up duct taped to each other on the side of a river in New York. Saudis are on it. We start with that. Also, we have Bill O'Reilly joining us today. A look at some of the issues that happened this week. He's going to be, by the way, joining us for our election coverage, which starts at 6 p.m. Tuesday, only on the Blaze TV. Subscribe now at theblaze.com/TV. We're going to have live coverage. It's going to be great, but he's going to talk a little bit about that. Also,
going to the election by the numbers as well. The updates, there's a couple. We moved two Senate races from leaners to toss-ups and vice versa. Also give you a download of how the House looks if you use the prediction markets. People can bet on the outcomes of these, and a lot of times these seem to be more interesting to look at than the polls, and they reflect some interesting things, and we get into that as well.
And Paul Boyce from the Daily Wire on, is the Pope a communist? And what's happening in China? All on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program. It's Thursday, November 1st.
Well, whatever your politics, you can't deny that John Stewart has a history of attacking the hypocrisy and high ideals of journalism for his, subversive approach to media criticism. He's a firebrand. Does that mean anything in the era of President Donald Trump? In post-Kavanaugh confirmation hearing world, does anything even matter? Jon Stewart and Dave Chappelle sat down with CNN's Christiane Ohnampour, and Stewart had a few things to say. Listen.
This guy is, he's giving you all cash, the cash flow in the Trump era for these TV stations and for these news.
Can I say that might have been an issue, and maybe it still is an issue for the people who are the bean counters, but we the journalists,
I mean, smite the bean counters, because we're, and I like to use the word smite or smote, because I am a high and mighty journalist. But anyway, you were saying, John, go ahead.
Can I say that might have been an issue, and maybe it still is an issue for the people who are the bean counters, but we, the journalists, we, I think, believe that our job is to navigate the truth and to do the fact-checking and all the rest of it. So I think that's what motivates a lot of
people. But I think the journalists have taken it personally.
Okay,
they're personally wounded and offended by this man. He baits them, and they dive in. And what he's done well, I thought, is appeal to their own narcissism, to their own ego. Mm. Because what he says is, these are the, and the journalists stand up and say, we are noble, we are honorable, how dare you, sir? And they take it personally. And now he's changed the conversation to not that his policies are silly or not working or any of those other things. It's all about the fight. He's able to tune out everything else and get people just focused on the fight.
He's right.
And how dare you say that we are offended? Of course we're offended, because he's saying we are the enemy and we are not the enemy.
That's exactly what's going on. Stewart, I think, is a funny guy. He is very powerful in the way he has persuaded so many people with The Daily Show. He's got an agenda. I don't know how he would handle the job today. in this environment, when Trump is president, the press has an ugly infatuation with him, a session that pretends to be hatred. It's one thing to say those things when you're not in the daily sausage making business, as he can be aloof and say, you know what, you guys are being fools and idiots. I would never do that. But I don't know if he would be any different. Maybe he would. This pretend hatred, I don't know. It's turned real. There is this stalkerish fixation on Donald Trump and this fixation on just doing, so we got to destroy him. And they are completely unwilling to admit that they are inarguably a massive reason he rose to power in the first place. And so people are tired of it. Christiane Amanpour, I mean, does anybody not roll their eyes when she comes up? And here's a report from Christiane Amanpour. And he's like, oh, okay, yeah, this is going to be fair. It's the mostly, you know, bi-coastal media elites who act as if they are the voice of America. Who are you? Did you go to some university to get your degree on what America really thinks? No. America, I'm here to tell you that your suspicions are correct. They don't speak for you. I mean, and they should say that. Look, we're in this bubble. We're in with all of the, you know, overeducated. I've got more college education than you do. And in fact, I went to a better college than you do. I know these things. They're in that bubble. We're knee deep. No, we're neck deep in a humorless time. Now more than ever, comedians are rebuking the journalists. This should be interesting. You know, the one thing is, if we could just detach just a little bit from it, this is really kind of fun and interesting to watch.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
Go to Pat, who's joining us now from Pat Unleashed. He's back on his chain. He's unleashed, you know, in the morning prior to this program.
So he's back on the chain, but he's unleashed?
Well,
we've chained him?
It seems you chained like more me immediately after the show. Yeah.
Oh, okay. You can't unleash him for more than a couple of hours every day. Right. How are you, Pat?
Well, you know, everything you just said there is why I get so pissed off every time I see a Beto sign on somebody's yard. Think how stupid can you be? Why? Why do you want a socialist in Texas? What's the matter with you?
You ready for this one? What are you thinking in Florida?
Oh, yeah.
Florida, where he's an avowed socialist.
He's an avowed socialist, by the way.
Pretty much.
Right
the
now,
governor.
Gillum. Yeah, Andrew Gillum.
So right now, Florida is, I believe, one or two on the list of 50, the freest states. I believe Florida is one or two. If he gets into office, his proposals.
Oh, gosh.
Put them down in the low 40s from one or two to 47 or 48. That's amazing.
And he's ahead by 6 points.
What are you
Madness.
Thinking?
Madness. Every time I drive into my neighborhood, I see this Beto sign. And so last night we're out trick-or-treating with the kids and their kids. So my grandkids are out trick-or-treating. And we go to the house with the Beto sign. And I'm like, they've probably poisoned their candy. We shouldn't go here.
We should stop demonizing people, but these people are poisoning candy.
So then she opens up her door, the woman of the house, and she's wearing a Beto for Senate t-shirt on top of it. I'm like, really? Really? You're even going to all your neighbors, know every single one of them is a Ted Cruz fan. Every single one of them. And so it's just an in-your-face to everybody in this neighborhood.
Excuse me, what is Halloween all about?
An in-your-face to everybody in the neighborhood?
Yes, what is Halloween all about?
Well, dressing up as something that you're not. Yeah, so maybe as a big
You dress as something that you're not, and you decorate your house to make it the scariest damn house you can. And you open up the door. Ah!
Yes. And I told Jackie, I'm going to go up and ask her if the $35,000 or $40,000 they're paying in property taxes just isn't enough. Gotta pay more.
And Jackie said, No,
you're not going up there. You're not going up there.
You
are not going up there. No.
Oh.
I thought domestic tranquility was more important.
There is a point where Pat Unleashed is leashed, and it's with Jackie.
Yes, it is.
For sure.
That's an iron leash. You can't even move that chain.
So what'd they give away at the house? Party favors.
Oh, no, not even
kidding. Yeah, those little New Year's things that you blow into.
Oh.
You're kidding me.
So first of all, that's all we heard the rest of the night from my grandkids. Secondly, I'm sure they don't believe in candy. You know,
what do you mean they don't believe in candy?
They don't believe in candy for the kids.
I don't believe candy is a real thing.
It's going to rot their teeth. I'm not giving them candy. You just can't do that to children. And what about the obesity epidemic in this country?
That's probably what it is.
You know that's what it is.
You know,
that's amazing.
You know what? Yeah. I remember, you're too young, but Pat, you'll remember this. Do you remember going to people's houses before the big fake scare on Halloween, mm-hmm. and you would get candy apples, you would get popcorn balls. I remember making them.
All the time.
You would make...
And you'd actually eat them.
Yes, you'd make the popcorn ball, mm-hmm. and we didn't have store-bought candy. When I was really young, we did not get store-bought candy. You would go house to house, and people would make stuff. What? Mm-hmm. Huh? Mm-hmm. So you would make stuff. I remember there was some lady like that Beto voter. There was this lady, she was an old lady, and she lived there, and she thought she was going to be the good doer of there, and she would give us toothbrushes every year.
Oh my gosh. Oh,
and she would give us a toothbrush, and she would say,
"Stop it.
This, because you've got all those sweets, make sure you brush your teeth. Here's a toothbrush, and I'll have another one for you next year." And I remember looking at her going, "I ain't coming back here next year.
This is our last trip here, that's for sure." It's also interesting, you know, that you bring up the thing that never happened. There was never a razor blade in anybody's apple. There was never a poisoned popcorn ball. It never happened.
So the poison was in a pixie stick.
In Houston.
And it was a dad who killed his own children.
For the insurance money.
It was so sad.
Yeah, really sad. And he was executed for that crime, like, right away.
he
killed his son in 74. He was executed in 74. So
really?
yeah, he was
same year.
It seemed that's what I read yesterday. Yeah, it used to happen pretty quickly.
Yeah,
but he deserved it. And that's the only known documented case of candy poisoning. But there's never been, to my knowledge, ever been a razor blade in why would there be a razor blade in somebody's apple at Halloween? You'd have to be like trick or treating at Charlie Manson's house. Who would do that?
I know.
Never happened.
And the pixie stick thing is amazing because he put, I don't know what kind of poison.
Cyanide.
Mm-hmm. He put cyanide in the pixie sticks for his own children.
Yeah.
They went door to door. The pixie sticks he just threw into their bag. They get home. "Dad, can we have any candy?" He said, "Not tonight, kids, but you can have one pixie stick." And so he knew. Mm-hmm. And he put the pixie stick and they down the pixie stick. They die. He calls police. Police are like, "Oh my gosh, oh my children, who would do this? It was one of our neighbors." All the neighbors, nobody was giving out pixie sticks. Turns out to be him. And it changes America.
It seriously did.
It did. It changed everything.
We
went from
ever since then, you didn't trust anybody.
Nope.
And it opened up all that. Well, you threw away anything that didn't come from a store, first of all. Anything that wasn't prepackaged, you threw it away.
I remember as a kid, looking at those things, because we grew up there were people that made great stuff. Mm-hmm. And you would be like, "Oh, no, Mrs. Olson, she's made this. It's so great. She only does it on Halloween." You get it, and your parents would go, "I'm not sure. You sure you got that from her house?" "I think so." Throw it away.
Yeah.
What? Mm-hmm.
Or anything that was even like mildly opened that somehow tore it, you put it into the bag. Nope, you had to throw that away too. As if like if you're injecting poison into something, it's the rip. They're going to rip it open and then inject the poison instead of just poking a needle hole through the actual wrapper. They're going to go through that much trouble.
It's crazy. And look what happened to us. Look what happened to us. We no longer trust each other. We think everybody's out to get us. Mm-hmm. It was one story, made by the media, pushed out into the media because it sold newspapers, it got television coverage, then it distorted and twisted into stuff that wasn't true. We didn't need social media. We needed one story, and look what it did to us.
It's amazing. I mean, to the point where they even had emergency rooms. X-ray your candy. Yeah.
I remember that.
What a waste of time and money. Crazy. Just crazy.
Kids, and you can take your kid, your candy to the... Nobody thought to say, this isn't happening.
Right.
This is not happening. There's no case of this. None.
It's really hard, though. And it's like the precursor to social media urban legends, right? I mean, it's the same concept, but now it's so much easier and so many more believe them.
Yes.
You know, it would probably be really hard to start that fake rumor back in 1982 or whatever, late 70s, when that became the thing where you had to go get your x-ray, your candy x-rayed. Now, you put it out there, and within a week, everyone believes it.
Well, it's because this is the blessing and the curse. In the old days, all you needed was a legitimate story on Walter Cronkite that nobody really saw.
Yeah.
And they heard this story, and then word of mouth. No, I saw it with Cronkite. Some guy was killing children in Houston. Mm-hmm. That spreads like wildfire. There's nowhere to go. Where are you going to go? Is somebody going to take the time to go to the library and look up the Houston Chronicle to find the story? No. So it just becomes reality. Well, now we can tell this story, and I can guarantee you that there's people listening right now that are Googling that story to say, wait a minute, is that true? And they're going to spend a day, and they'll read it, and they'll know everything about that story. The problem is, at the same time that blessing has happened, the curse of being able to make fake news, you know, Russian, you know, disinformation campaigns and just sick people who are just making stuff up, that also exists. But we won't take the time. Before it was, what am I going to do? Go to the library and ask for them to send a copy of the... No, now we won't even take the time to do anything but read the headline, a little bit of that story, and send it to somebody else. You got to do your homework. Yeah. Look at how one story changed America. Think of Kavanaugh. Think of any of these stories that are out there. Think of now how many sources have said Donald Trump is responsible for the shooting in Pittsburgh. Not true. Not true.
Yeah, the shooter hated Donald Trump.
Right, hated him. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be, that will be in our history books. That will now be in our history books.
By the way, I don't want to disseminate fake news. Ronald O'Brien, the candy man, was executed in 84, not 74.
Oh, okay.
All right.
I was going to say, even for Texas, that's pretty efficient.
That would be really fast.
O'Brien, any relation to Beto?
Yes.
He's O'Rourke. I don't think.
Brothers. They both have O's in this. Yeah. So it's like O'Reilly. You don't think I'm asking that about Bill O'Reilly as well?
Good. Your cousins.
Bet. Yeah. You bet. All right. Thank you very much.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck Program.
Like listening to this podcast? If you're not a subscriber, become one now on iTunes. And while you're there, do us a favor and rate the show.
Bill O'Reilly, where we can pick the brain of a giant. And he's on the program now a day early because, I don't know, he can't get up early tomorrow or he wants to sleep in. He's got jammies and he wants to play with his dog. I'm not sure, but he's made time for all of us now. And here he is, Bill O'Reilly.
I'll be in South Carolina, Beck.
You're going to be in South Carolina?
Uh-huh. So I'm on the road tomorrow, and I wanted to give you and Stu my undivided attention.
Oh, my goodness.
Thank you.
And,
That's amazing.
It's not the most informed analyst in America. It's the most astute.
Most astute. Word for the day.
Mm-hmm.
Bill, lots going on this week. Where would you like to start?
You know, I think the frenzy of the media covering the elections is worth talking about.
Okay.
Because, you know, they got a lot invested in this, the national media.
And so does Hollywood. Hollywood is making a push like I have not seen before.
Yeah,
they are everywhere.
Those pinheads don't mean anything. You know, it's interesting because there isn't one Hollywood star now that can open a movie. It used to be Clint Eastwood or John Wayne or, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger. They could open movies that people would just go to see the film because they were in it. That's gone. There isn't any buddy out there of superstar stature. So thus you're left with Robert De Niro cursing and, you know, guys who haven't showered in 5 days and I don't even know who they are.
Oprah Winfrey is in Georgia this weekend.
Who?
Oprah.
Oprah is going to be on the on the tour with Mrs. Obama.
The campaign for the governor of Georgia.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Right. She's campaigning.
Right.
I think she's going to lose. I think the Republican will win in Georgia. But getting back to your original brilliant question, what do you want to talk about?
Right.
And you must have studied, or you and Stu discussed that for about 3 hours.
Yeah, we did.
It's the national media has so much on the line here. Mm-hmm. Because if the Republicans pull it out in the House and they control both houses of Congress, and Trump struts around like it's me because I did 87,000 rallies and everybody loves me. Where's the media go? I mean, they're just slammed to the ground.
I agree with you on this, but I don't think
there's a frenzy now.
Here's what they will do. Of course, they will say, you know what? America is even more racist, than we thought, even with the shooting and the bombing. This is who America is, apparently.
That'll bury them even more.
Oh, I know that, but they won't see that
coming. Bury them even more. You know what? You're starting to attack the messenger. In the sense that people have to either buy your newspaper or watch you on television, you keep insulting them. You're driving people away. And you know, it is a tribalism thing now, particularly on television news. Whatever tribe you're in, that's the station you watch. Did you guys see the study that came out that 89% of CNN viewers vote Democrat?
Wow. Of course.
That came out, and 95% of Fox News viewers, 95%.
It wasn't like that.
Republican.
It was not like that. When I was there and you were there,
no.
It was not like that.
Nope. And so now it's, you know, my tribe has this channel. And then all the networks had very high Democrat voting people. But I see, and I don't think anybody else is really following this, I think if Trump is reelected and the Republicans maintain control, that the national media in this country is going to explode, and in a bad way for them, because they are as crazed, and that's the word, as I've ever seen in my 45 years in journalism.
So
I've never seen people, they're like foaming at the mouth, Beck.
You know, it's bizarre. This week, Don Lemon said, we have to stop demonizing people and realize that the real terrorists in this country are white males, mainly on the right. That's a quote in the same sentence.
What if you or Stu or me said the real threat are black males on the left? What if we had said that?
Oh my
We would be done.
Okay,
done.
So
But wait.
So we would have been fired,
right,
and hung and whipped and then tied to a stake with twigs and burned. Okay, so now let's go back. Why can Don Lemon say that about portion of the American population?
Because they know Don, and they know he's not a racist. And, you know, we also know what's going on in the country, and we know Donald Trump is a racist. So
But here's the deal. If the press were fair and looking for the truth, they would cover Don Lemon like they covered Megyn Kelly.
Yes.
In the blackface.
Yes.
Thing, okay?
Yes, they would. Yes.
Right. But they don't. So therefore, people who aren't engaged, and that's most people in the media, they don't know Don. Who knows Don Lemon? Go out today in Dallas and ask, hey, what do you think of Don Lemon? And they go, is that lemonade? What?
Right.
They don't know him. Nobody knows him. But the media could have destroyed him, could have said that's a racist statement. I don't believe that Don Lemon's a racist because I never call people racist unless they're members of the Klan or the Nazi Party. then I can say with surety that they are. But, you know, you're in a country now, we're in a country now, where the truth doesn't matter anymore, and that's so frightening to me.
So, Bill, I know I'm asking you to speculate, which you never do, but you're looking at the polls, you're following this.
Yeah, I am.
And you're feeling the mood of the country. What do you think is coming for election night?
Very tight, all over the place. Very, very tight. Up late, you know, it's in places like Montana, in Arizona, Nevada, Missouri, in the Senate races, this is just airtight. And I think that's how it's going to play out. So I believe that the Senate will maintain its Republican status, and maybe the GOP will pick up two seats. And the House is impossible to say because you don't know the candidates and you don't know how much money is pouring into these small districts. But the Republicans have to defend so many more seats than the Democrats just by the odds, just by that. You would say the Democrats should be very close to a majority in the House. But if it's only a 3 or 4 seat majority, it doesn't really matter because Trump's going to be able to peel away a few votes from moderate Democrats for what he wants to do. If it's 20, 25 seats on the Democratic Party, then you're going to have gridlock for 2 years.
And you, even if it's 4, you're going to have hearings and investigations and nonstop, don't you think?
Yeah, no, I doubt it, because from my read of the Mueller investigation,
that thing's over.
Yeah, and he's not going to even issue a report. Mueller's not even going to tell American public what he found or didn't find.
No, it was it was supposed to be issued right after the election. That's what I've read.
From according to my sources, which are impeccable, he's going to fall back on, this was a criminal investigation. We're not bringing charges against anybody in the Trump administration. And that's it. Goodbye. See you later. I'm around if you need me for anything else. Because if you are an investigative agency and you find nothing against Stu, all right, you don't put out a report that exonerates Stu. You just say, we didn't find anything. We're not going to prosecute. That's what he's going to do. So for $17 million, that's what we're going to get. However, the Inspector General in the Justice Department has to issue his report of whether the FBI intentionally booted the Russian collusion investigation. That ties right into Mueller. Now, he has to get specific, but he'll do what he did the last time. He'll go, you know, it doesn't look real good, but we can't really prove it. Thanks a lot. It's the way our bureaucracy works. You very rarely get anybody who utters a declarative sentence and points a finger. They don't do this. These guys are CYA experts.
So what does this mean, then, if the Democrats control? You don't believe that they have a chance of taking the Senate, do you?
No. I mean, if that happens, that's Armageddon for Trump.
Yes. If they take the House, and it's, do you think it's more likely that it's 25 or 3?
I would say it's close. It's going to be under 10. I'm probably going to be wrong.
What does the country look like a year from now with, you know, a House that is controlled by the Democrats?
I just don't think it's going to be that big a deal. I don't think that the Democratic Party is going to launch articles of impeachment because they'll lose the presidential race in 2020. I mean, time goes fast. And I just don't see the leadership, such as it is, of the Democratic Party wanting Donald Trump reelected president. And if you're going to, you know, put up a Kavanaugh situation against Trump, you're assuring his reelection. Because he's got 45% of the electorate now. Trump's got 45% of the vote now. You do anything crazy, you push him easily into 55.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look, people think that there are all these secular progressive, all these progressives running around. They're very, very few in number. But their voices are heard because the media acts in concert with them.
Mm-hmm.
All right? There aren't that many of them. Most Americans are in the middle. You know, they just want to have a government that functions well so they have opportunity and raise their kids and work hard. That's what they do. But they don't like persecutions. They don't like dishonesty. And, you know, I mean, in New Jersey, that's a race I'm watching.
We're talking about the elections next week and Menendez, who is running in New Jersey. Let's talk about that, Bill.
Yeah, he's losing support fast. And if the Democrats lose New Jersey, that will be stunning. And I just don't know. I used to live in New Jersey, how anybody could vote for Robert Menendez. I just can't imagine it. And that disturbs me. You know, I mean, this guy, he just, and it was a hung jury, just got, and then the Senate Ethics Committee hammered him, and then you're going to cast your ballot for this man? I mean, oh, my God. And this is corruption, you know, this beyond any reasonable doubt.
Well, see, and that is the thing when you said, you know, people don't like corruption. They don't, but they.
I know, but what is
they
it?
They seem to excuse
he's still
it
got
a lot.
5-point lead over the Republican right. challenger in New right. Jersey. Now, that lead is shrinking, and the commercials are devastating here against Menendez. So I think that might go to the Republican column.
Stu, do you think? Stu is just really good at stats.
Yeah. I mean, we've been tempted so many times to believe that New Jersey is going to, you know, it's going to happen. And it's really the only example of where it really has was the Christie election when he beat Corzine. But that was the same type of situation. I mean, Menendez should go down for this. I don't know if he will, but I'm, you know, hopeful.
Let me go ahead.
In the other states that it's really tough is Arizona and Nevada. Now, I said yesterday on the No Spin News, which, of course, is the newscast of record now in America, next to the Blaze. I mean, it's kind of split.
Well,
I said yesterday that I don't believe there's going to be a big African-American turnout for the midterms, you know, larger than usual, or Hispanic-American. I could be wrong on a Hispanic-American thing because the caravan got their attention. But the Kavanaugh thing, you know, that doesn't engage, generally speaking, people who are really trying to make ends meet and they're not watching cable and are not reading the newspapers and not locked in. They have to do so much just to survive.
So what is the thing? I mean, I know what's driving the ends, you know, the you know, democratic socialism, stop Trump, driving that. Probably the caravan and Kavanaugh driving that. What's driving the average person to go out and vote, Bill, do you think?
Well, I was debating a Democratic pollster, and he actually agreed with me that minorities probably won't come out in great numbers. But then he said, you know, these liberal white women in the suburbs are going to put the Dems over the top. It is tribal. There's no doubt about it. And what's driving people, the overwhelming issue in this country now is Donald Trump.
So
that's the overwhelming issue. His supporters love him. They're engaged. They're energized. And they're going to go and vote straight Republican ticket. And the people who don't like him are going to do the exact opposite. So you can talk health care. You can talk the economy. You can talk the issues. It's about Donald Trump. He knows it, all right? That's why he's running around everywhere to try to, you know, get his supporters to overwhelm his detractors.
Let's go to Florida. Gillum is an avowed socialist. Florida is not Manhattan, but he is now ahead by 5 points. What's happening there?
I think DeSantis is a bad candidate. On the Republican side, he's got no charisma. People don't know who he is. Gillum has got the Democratic establishment, lots of out-of-state money coming in, big, big money, so he can buy commercials in the populated zones. The machine, the Democratic machine in Florida, is very well organized in Orlando, Dade County, Broward County, Palm Beach County, and the Tampa area. It doesn't seem like the Republicans are as organized. Now, on the Senate race, I think the Governor Scott there, who's popular, has a shot if the people in the panhandle devastated by the hurricane can get it together and vote, because that's Republican territory. But I know Florida well. I taught high school there, and it's not the way it was when I was there. It's now a state that is very, very ideological.
Well, when you were when you were there, though, I believe Cornelius Vanderbilt had just built the first railroad.
No, Ponce de Leon and I.
Oh, okay.
Very good friends.
All right. Didn't know they had high school back then, but anyway.
Searching for the Fountain of Youth.
Apparently never found it, Bill. Apparently never found it.
Yeah. Okay, Beck, you can mock me if you want. But your audience, they have eyes. They can see you.
Yeah,
Sanders,
they can see you.
And they can see me.
Yeah. It's scary, isn't it? I mean, I am looking more and more like Colonel Sanders every day.
Now you got chickens following you around.
Oh, my gosh. Well, the suicidal ones. The chickens are like, please, make this end. I can't watch CNN another minute, please.
Did you have a nice Halloween, Beck? I wanted to ask you that. Were you happy with the way the day went yesterday?
Yes, it seems like an odd question, but yes, I was. I was out with my
grandchildren. Did anybody shaving cream your house or anything? Did you get any of that?
No, I live in a compound. I have SWAT teams.
I paid urchins to do it, so now I'm going to have to get my money.
Yeah, you're going to have to get your money back. Yeah, you're going to have to get it because that didn't happen.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck Program.
Paul Boyce is with us now. He's a writer with the Daily Wire. He was a guy who got his start writing for Ben Shapiro in 2013. He is known as Vox Dei for the Michael Knowles show. And an article caught my eye that he wrote about the Chinese cardinals. Pope Francis has a natural sympathy for communists, and he makes some pretty strong statements here that I'm not hearing other people actually report. Most people, if you're a Catholic or you know a lot of Catholics, most people are asking these questions, but no one seems willing to answer them. Paul has. Welcome to the program, Paul.
All right. Thanks, Glenn. Thank you for having me.
You bet. So I've been watching this Pope for a while. A lot of people, I mean, as soon as CNN said, oh, my gosh, oh, this guy is wonderful, I remember when before the smoke had cleared the chimney, CNN was all over him, and I thought, uh-oh, that's got to be bad. And so we've been watching him, and he has a tendency to not like capitalism. He has a tendency to like statism, Marxism, et cetera, et cetera. But what he's done in China is truly breathtaking. Can you explain first what he's done?
Yeah, so essentially the deal in China, now the provisions of it haven't completely been fully laid out, but the insiders close to the deal and people on the ground in China have pretty much stated the Chinese communist government is going to have a role in selecting bishops, and the Pope is basically just going to have veto power. And also the underground church in China who's faithful to the Holy See is going to join the official church in China that's recognized by the communist government. And the 30 bishops that are associated with that are going to become a minority in the bishops' conference there.
Okay, so the only reason the Catholics really survive and are growing is because of the underground church. And it's my understanding that having a foreign leader basically appoint your bishops in the history, the 2,000-year history of the church, it's never happened.
Basically, yes. I mean, we have in history, I mean, the French crown certainly played a role in selecting bishops, but it never works out for the church when that happens.
Or the people.
I mean, certainly. Yeah, or the people, and this certainly won't help the people in China or the Chinese church. What is essentially going to happen is, I mean, China doesn't care about religion, so let's just say, okay, the Pope has veto power on the bishops they appoint. Okay, so let's say he vetoes it 10 times. What motivation does China have to give him a bishop that he wants? They'll just say, okay, it goes unfilled. We don't care. They have no motivation whatsoever work with the Holy See.
And I want to correct something. You just said, because I think it was a misunderstanding or misspeak. China has every reason to care about religion. They want to destroy religion and make it into a Chinese tool to bring you to communism.
I agree with that. I mean, they don't care if religion is doing well or if it's healthy.
Correct.
So what motivation do they have to work with the Pope to give him a bishop that he wants if he vetoes once they appoint?
So in here, in your article, you talk about Marcelo Sanchez Sarando. He's an archbishop. And
yes,
he's the guy, he's from Argentina, and he was the guy negotiating this. He writes, if I may quote from your article, he has said about China, quote, "You don't have shanty towns. You don't have drugs. Young people don't have drugs. There's a positive national consciousness. They want to show that they've changed. They've already accepted private property," end quote. Wow.
Yeah, breathtaking.
So you make the case that the Pope likes communists because he only knows communists that have been persecuted.
Yeah, I think that, and Cardinal Zen says the same thing in his piece that he wrote for the New York Times. I think the key paragraph in his whole article is, "Francis may have natural sympathy for communists," I'm quoting him now, "because for him, they are the persecuted. He doesn't know them as the persecutors once they become in power, like the communists in China." So I think what we have here with Pope Francis is the inverse of Pope John Paul II. Pope John Paul II grew up after the communist revolution. He grew up after all the rhetoric and once they're in power, and all he sees is persecution. So John Paul II has a very staunch position against communism, whereas Pope Francis, he grows up during the revolution where communists are saying, "Oh, we're for the poor, we love the poor," and of course the right-wing military governments that they're opposing aren't angels either. And so he views communism through that lens, and I think that's what's sort of spurring him to have this soft, warm spot for them, and not seeing for what it is, because the church has throughout the centuries, throughout the 20th century, condemned communism as an evil ideology. It's condemned socialism as an evil ideology. It's not just a matter of practice. It deprives people of private property.
Right. It's why I think I can't remember now. I'm wrong on this. Pope Leo, who was the so-called Hitler's Pope? It wasn't Leo. It was
Hitler. They say Pius
Pope Pius. But he was not Hitler's Pope. That was disinformation from the former Soviet Union. The communists hate Catholics. They hate them. Now this Pope is getting into bed with them.
Yes, I think that's very clear with this Chinese deal.
What does this mean to the Christians and the Catholics in China in real life?
It means for them. I mean, certainly China is not stopping their persecution of them. They've destroyed several churches and they've leveled several Marian shrines. I mean, even after this deal was signed. For them, they're just going to be persecuted, and I think their morale is going to be lowered, because unlike the communists in Eastern Europe during the time of Pope John Paul II, they felt like they had a moral leader, and I don't think they're going to feel that, and I think that it's going to harm them, ultimately, in the end.
Paul, are you Catholic?
Yes, I am, and I want to clarify. I very much believe in the Holy See, and very much believe in the Chair of Peter. And my criticism here of Pope Francis is simply as a statesman and as an administrator. And I think that's what the majority of criticism towards Pope Francis in recent weeks, with the recent letter by Archbishop Vigano and the scandals that have been rocking Rome, have been about.
Okay, so I wanted to ask you if you're a Christian or a Catholic, because I know you are, but I wanted to make sure that people know that you are a strong Catholic. You're not one of these, sideline Catholics like I used to be. You're a strong Catholic. So let me ask you this question. I do not mean offense by it, but I see the way this Pope is behaving here on, you know, on our continent with the scandal of the children, and I just don't understand it. I see how he's come out against capitalism, and he does not seem to be a friend of freedom. Now with this in China, are you concerned that this guy is not real Francis-like?
I certainly am. I certainly think his actions in recent weeks have certainly shown that. Regarding the child sex abuse scandal, he accepted Cardinal Worrell of Washington, D.C.'s resignation after several weeks, and he sent him off with a very glowing letter and notes. And, of course, I don't know how familiar you are with the Archbishop Vigano statement that gave a very detailed account accusing Pope Francis of having taken sanctions off Cardinal McCarrick that were imposed upon him by Pope Benedict. And I think those allegations have very seemed very credible after several weeks of investigation. And still, he has not given any public statement on it. It's been lots of gaslighting from the people in his circle. So I am very concerned about Pope Francis as an administrator and as a leader of the church right now.
Paul, thank you so much. I'm out of time, but please stay in touch with me because I'm fascinated. The Pope plays a huge role in today's world, he's almost a tipping point in some ways. And I really enjoy talking to devout Catholics about it. Who just don't have an axe to grind. So thank you so much, Paul. I appreciate it. You bet.
Thank you so much for having me on.
You bet. You can follow Paul at Paul Boyce, B-O-I-S, Paul Boyce 39.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.